Welcome back. It's hour number two of the Bible study. It's the Ask the Pastor Hour. Open phones at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I guess all you Bible study people out there, been listening to the Bible study and law and gospel and issues, etc., and morning devotions on our morning program for so long, all your religious issues are settled. Maybe not. With us on the telephone here in the second hour of the Bible study is Pastor Jeff Alexander, pastor at Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Greenwood, Indiana. Something of a weather shock from him just a year ago in Phoenix, Arizona, or close to Phoenix. Now dealing with snow. You never had any snow down in Phoenix, did you, Pastor Alexander?
We sure didn't, Chuck. It's been a huge adjustment. When we got hit the other day, you know, my boys were both excited to see the snow, and I was too. Then I realized, wow, I probably need to shovel my driveway. And I thought, well, to do that, I need a shovel. And so had to buy the shovel.
It's a lot easier than by hand.
That's right.
Have you ever tried that? That doesn't go very fast.
That doesn't go very far.
No.
That doesn't go very far. So we got the scraper, we got the shovel, we got the salt, we got the de-icer spray. We're good to go now.
Oh, well, excellent, excellent. How many inches of snow did you get there in Greenwood?
I think here at Greenwood we probably had about 4 inches overnight. Overnight Saturday, maybe five. Actually, for the first time for me also, we ended up having to cancel services on Sunday. We had snowfall, and then we had freezing rain, and then snowfall on top of that. The road by our church wasn't even plowed. So many churches actually in Indianapolis were closed on Sunday. Mm. So it's kind of bizarre.
Well, we thank you for spending some time with us here. Are you pretty much all settled in now in what is still relatively new parish for you there at Mount Olive Lutheran Church?
We're getting there. We're getting there. I feel very at home here at this congregation. They've been very warm and loving and accepting towards me and my family. And so we love it. It's taken some adjustment, especially this time of year, being a soul pastor with the Advent season and coming up on Christmas. A lot of services going on and a lot of preaching. And a challenge, I think, is to keep the creativity going. And that's a challenge when you're preaching so often. And really, the same message is coming through again and again. And how to tell it in a different way, but to communicate it in a way that the central teaching about Jesus coming to save us as his people shines through.
Well, the issue I'd like to raise with you here is that it has to do with something that I found on the internet this morning, taken from the O'Reilly Factor, which was broadcast last night. I have some audio that I would like to play, and I suspect it's going to be a little bit difficult to understand. It involves a sophomore in high school who attends public school and is part of a history class in which the teacher, according to the student anyway, regularly, if not daily, berates Christianity, berates religion, berates what might otherwise be called, I suppose, a conservative or traditional view of things. And this young man took a tape recorder to class and recorded some of this, and now has actually filed suit against the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to play this for you and our folks here. I know it'll be a little bit difficult to understand, but we'll clarify what is said there to the extent that we can. So let's listen to that, if you would, and then we'll get your comments.
Personal story segment tonight. 16-year-old Chad Farnan is a sophomore at Capistrano Valley High School in Mission Viejo, California. According to Chad, his history teacher, Dr. James Corbett, consistently criticizes Christians and other people he doesn't seem to like.
I think if the parents do a certain thing, it's in their best interests. Religion! We have to have something that is irrational to counter that rational approach. When you put on your Jesus glasses, you can't see the truth. Conservatives don't want women to avoid pregnancy. That's interfering with God's work. You gotta stay pregnant, better put them in the kitchen and have babies into your body. And that's the news. That's not O'Reilly and Hannity. Those people are liars.
So you heard him say that the way you keep the masses down, the way you keep the women barefoot and pregnant is to put on your Jesus glasses, to use religion to keep people ignorant. And then he basically says that putting on your Jesus glasses is not the path to the truth. Now, you know, there he is in his own words, and now a guy who was teaching history just a few days ago, and I guess feeling fairly confident in the confines of his own classroom, has now had his perspectives exposed to the rest of the nation. What do you think as a pastor? Does, you know, do you think to yourself, well, you know, this is one kid in one classroom somewhere in America, and this doesn't have any business rising to the level of a national story? Or as a pastor, we have some more audio later on as the sophomore reacts to some of this. He identifies himself as a Christian, and he feels like what his teacher is doing is wrong. How do you view this?
Well, I think that I did have a little trouble hearing all that audio, but I appreciate you telling me what exactly was said there. I think that, you know, the fact that this isn't front page news, this isn't something that, you know, it's on O'Reilly Factor, but I myself hadn't heard of it yet, and not having watched O'Reilly last night. But I kind of imagine to myself if similar things were said about Islam at this point in time, boy, that would be all over the place. And people would be causing an uproar. There would be protests. There might be a lot of violence happening. I know recently there was that case of a British teacher, I believe, that allowed a teddy bear to be named Muhammad, and she was punished for that. So I think that the outcry against a teacher doing that is legit. I think it does deserve some attention. I wonder how often those kind of things take place, and maybe that's the point that Bill O'Reilly is trying to make. How often does this go on in classrooms that we're never aware of? And so I think it's something that we should be concerned about. I'm interested in hearing how the student challenged the teacher. It would be very interesting to how do you take a person like that on? I would want to talk about those Jesus glasses and really push him to say how does Jesus look at the world? And how do we look at the world as one who wears Jesus glasses? Do we see the world and share that perspective?
Well, and we can listen to that here in just a second.
Sure.
I'm trying to set the context here for whether or not Christian people should embrace this kind of approach. I think there are some Christian people who don't want Muslims bashed in public history class, and
right,
don't want Jewish people bashed in public history class, and don't want Christians bashed either.
And I would agree. I don't want to see Jewish people bashed or Muslim people bashed or Christian people bashed.
Well, now I wanted to play that audio to demonstrate to people that this is not merely a report of this sophomore student's recollection of what was said. There is a recording.
Yes.
So the recording speaks for itself. Now, here's what at least the first part of that recording says, word for word. How do you get the peasants to oppose something that is in their best interest? Religion. You have to have something that is irrational to counter that rational approach. When you put on your Jesus glasses, you can't see the truth. Those are his first words.
Right.
And do you, Pastor Alexander, tend to put that in the category of, well, this is a history teacher trying to stimulate thought and engage his students to think for themselves? He's just merely playing it out in order to stimulate analytical thought? Or do you think that, in the words that I just read to you, that he has crossed the line?
I think that's a crossing of the line when he says, when it sounds pretty definitive to say to his students, when you put on your Jesus glasses, you can't see the truth. It sure seems that is more than just stimulating discussion. That is being pretty bold in the agenda that he's trying to have accomplished there. You know, I think it's probably a valid thing that at times religion has been used for for less than respectable purposes. And I think that, history teachers have a right to share those things where Christianity and Christians were abused and were misled to do things. Maybe it has to do with racism. Maybe you could go back to certain wars in our history of our country, or even way back to the Crusades. And I think it's a right that he has, and maybe a responsibility that that history professor has to teach about how Christianity sometimes was not responsible for good things, but was responsible for bad things. But at the same time, can point out some good things that happened. And I think the same thing could be said of Muslims and Jews and at times in history where those things took place. But to make a statement like that, that putting on your Jesus glasses is irrational and you cannot see the truth, it sure seems to me, from my perspective, that that's a crossing of the line.
He went on to say, and this is a quote taken directly from the tape, "Conservatives don't want women to avoid pregnancies. That's interfering with God's work. You got to stay pregnant, barefoot, and in the kitchen and have babies until your body collapses."
Mm.
Now, I think you and I probably would agree, and most of our listeners would agree, that if he were to speak in this derisive way about African Americans,
mm-hmm.
or about Jewish people,
mm-hmm.
or about Latino people,
yes.
or Muslims, that there would be an uproar.
Correct.
And perhaps Christian people are saying, and by golly, you know, if you talk about Christians that way, there ought to be an uproar too. However, somebody might say, no, of all those people, yes, I can see where there'd be an uproar, but there should not be an uproar about this from Christians. And Chuck, you're wrong to even bring it up with Pastor Alexander, because we are the people who are supposed to turn the other cheek.
Mm.
We are the people who should, when this happens, should not create an uproar. What would you say?
We're also people, I think, that fight against injustice. And I certainly think that when you see a history teacher doing that with children who are very impressionable in his classroom and trying to steer them in that direction, I think that is an injustice and something that Christians do need to stand up against. Do we need to scream and holler over every time we're offended by people? No. I think that there's got to be a point in our life as Christians where we say, you know, for those who do not know Jesus, we can't expect them to understand. We can't expect them to get it. We can't expect them to understand all of this that we believe and know to be true because their minds are dark. Their hearts are darkened by the sin in their life, and ultimately we believe that they're held captive by none other than the devil. And so there comes a point in time where we have to say, well, we didn't expect anything more than that. But when something like that is happening in our schools and in our society, that we as taxpayers and as citizens are responsible for the education of our children, I think that is something that demands our attention, and I think it is an injustice.
Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. Here's a caller. Hi, Phil. You're on the Bible study. Good morning.
Good morning. I do have a question, but first I wanted to tell you, I have a friend. He's in his 30s. I go to church with him, and he knows the Bible pretty well. And he wanted to further his education to get a better job, so he went to college over at SWCC in Belleville, and they made it mandatory that he took an ethics class.
Mm-hmm.
And in this ethics class, the teacher was using the Old Testament as a source. He was talking about how ridiculous it was that Abraham was going to go sacrifice his son and things. And so my friend was trying to explain to him what it meant and was trying to use New Testament arguments. And he's saying, no, you can't use the New Testament here. We're talking about something completely different.
Mm.
You know, he's taking it out of context. But,
right.
But I just thought it was strange that they made it mandatory, you know. It had nothing to do with what he wanted to further his education for, but that was mandatory, and then they want to bash the Bible all the time. But, you know, and then my question is, how should we approach? Sometimes, you know, me and a few other people, we make light jokes, not real heavy jokes, but light jokes about false religions like Jehovah Witness or something like that, and other people say, oh, you shouldn't be making fun of other religions. That's not right. And I wouldn't do it to anybody's face. You know, I would try to witness to them, but. You know, I don't know. Maybe it isn't so so right or something. I'm not sure.
All right. We'll talk about it. Pastor Alexander?
Well, that I find that very interesting, first of all, what Phil was saying about public schools requiring classes there at that college, requiring ethics class. I know a lot of other schools. I've talked with students from the congregations that I've served who have gone off to public universities and have been required to take either a world religions class or a Christianity class as part of their general education. And consistently you hear that a professor uses that podium to badmouth Christianity. And a lot of times I think that what you hear them justify their approaches, they would say, well, we're not badmouthing Muslims or we're not badmouthing Jews because they're in the minority. But you Christians, you know, you're supposedly in the majority, so we have a right to attack the majority. So then that opens up a new debate too, you know, are we truly in the majority anymore? Or are we another minority party? But that's common that you hear that in public universities. And I'm thankful for when Christian people are willing to, listen to what a person has to say. I think that's important for us as Christians to be able to listen to the perspectives, but then to dialogue with those perspectives, to not just back down and keep our mouths shut, but be able to dialogue in a way that is not attacking and is not going on the counterattack, but is listening to the arguments that are said and then are responding to them. And I think that kind of like what St. Peter says in the New Testament, that we must always be prepared to give an answer to anyone who asks, but to do this with gentleness and respect. That's the key, is to do that in a respectful way that does not further the impression of many unbelievers that Christians are just arrogant and are bullies and just it's their way or no way, but that we can listen and give an answer for the reason of the hope that we have and do it with respect for people who disagree with us. The second part of that,
go ahead.
What he was saying about witnessing to people of different faiths and cults, I think that many people are probably guilty of that as well, you know, of saying, you know, kind of lighthearted jokes about other people. And I think that is something where we have to be careful and to consider our own actions and realize that we are all sinful, we all make those mistakes, and yet also evaluate our lives and say, are the things that we're talking about, the stories that we're sharing, are those giving the best witness to the people around us of what we ourselves believe? And is that breaking down an opportunity that we might have one day to share the message of salvation with someone who doesn't believe it? I think there are many Christians who struggle with that or are guilty with that, and it's important both to remember that we are under grace, that we are forgiven in Christ, but we're also empowered to live the life and shine the light into the world so that when people look at us that they might see Jesus and they might give glory to the Father who is in heaven.
Well, let me play the devil's advocate here and just walk through my logic with me and then let me see what your response is. Because we're talking about apparently an ethics class at a state institution
mm-hmm.
in a country where the separation of church and state is pretty well defined and pretty well protected. And so you have an agent of the state, this teacher at this state community college, who is talking about ethics and comes to the Abraham and Isaac story. Now, even we as Christians have difficulty understanding how it is that God instructs Abraham to kill his son. Ethically, that's a prickly issue.
Yes.
But at that point, we realize that the fullness of the story, which I'm a little bit familiar with since we've been studying Genesis here recently in our 10 o'clock hour, the fullness of the story is the gospel, in that God provides a substitute,
mm-hmm.
a ram caught in the thicket, so that Isaac doesn't have to die, but the ram dies in its place, just as Christ will die or died in your place and my place. It's
right.
It's about the gospel.
That's right.
Which the New Testament says is foolishness to people who are secular.
Yeah. Foolishness to those who are perishing.
So
like I said before, why should we be surprised?
Well, that brings me to my conclusion. So, Mr. Student in the state secular class, don't argue with the ethics teacher about the gospel, something that he quite clearly is not going to be able to perceive in that context because it's a gospel thing. So, you know, if you want to go, if you want to schedule an appointment and go talk to him later outside the class, feel free.
Sure.
But don't bother to engage him right there in the state-sponsored secular ethics class. What do you think?
Well, I think it's a great opportunity for him to engage the professor. And I think, as you said, Chuck, that's an opportunity for him to say, look, professor, you know, I struggle ethically with this story as well. But I know what that story's main purpose is what happens after that, that the son was not sacrificed, but there was a substitute. And what a great opportunity a student would have to bring that in a public place to give witness to Jesus.
Whoa.
Isn't that great?
What happened to separation of church and state?
What happened to freedom of speech?
Touche. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's talk with Jack. Hi, you're on the Bible study. Good morning.
Hi. And I know as we're politically correct and being Christians are always nice and this, and we're supposed to be that way, but I think back to Elijah on the mountain and saying, you know, where's your God? Maybe he's sleeping. Why don't you just talk a little bit louder? And he was kind of making fun of that God. And,
yeah. That's true.
I don't think he was wrong, do you?
No, I don't think he was wrong. However, mm-hmm. he was having a religion-to-religion argument there as opposed to a religion-to-secular argument, was he not?
No, that's true. That's what I'm talking about, other religions. But
sure.
When sometimes we tell jokes about them or make
sure.
fun of them. Or,
I hear what you're saying.
Of them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
He was taunting.
Thanks, Jack.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Jack. Yeah, you're right. He sure was taunting. And he sure was, you know, I think maybe not as much the people, the adherents of that false religion, but also that false God.
How come he didn't turn the other cheek, Pastor Alexander?
I guess that wasn't the action that he felt was needed at that time. You know, obviously there are times where, you know, turn the other cheek. I mean, sometimes that can be misused too. There are times where we do, as Christians, stand up. Like I said before, we stand up against injustice. And I think when people challenge us in our faith, I think we not only have the right, but also the responsibility to stand up for the truth. Be that in a public place.
So here's what I hear you saying. When it comes perhaps to my own personal reputation and my own personal stake, maybe I need to turn the other cheek. Maybe I need to sacrifice that. But when it comes to what we know about God, when it comes to defending God, when it comes to standing up for his honor, that's when we need to go on the offensive. Is that what you're saying?
I think that's a good way to summarize what I'm saying.
All right.
I would agree.
Mm-hmm. All right. See, I'm learning something here.
Well, okay.
It's not entirely hopeless. I want you to know that.
That's good.
We're going to take a break here, and then when we come back, I'm going to play some more audio from this O'Reilly interview. You hear the sophomore himself explain what he's thinking and what he's doing, and we'll get Pastor Alexander's take on that. Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727 if you would like to change the subject, talk about something else. It's an open phone program, and we'll be right back.
What hope is there in the ascension of Jesus Christ? Dr. Norman Nagel answered that question on Issues, Etc.
Ascension says he's done it. And when, at the consummation, he delivers it all up to the Father, we are along in that he offers to the Father. And as Son to the Father, the Father cannot reject him. He's already accepted his sacrifice. And that means that when we are thus brought to the Father by Jesus, we can no more be rejected by the Father than that the Father could reject his own Son. There we are all one lump with Jesus.
Listen to Issues, Etc. weekdays 3 to 6 on AM 850 KFUO.
What from your pantry can be used to make diamonds? Find out next on today's Creation Moment. And now, here's our Creation Moment host, Ian Taylor.
Perhaps you have recently read one of the many new articles about amazing new process for making diamonds. The new process uses simple heat to make diamonds out of anything that has carbon in it. The diamonds are made from carbon atoms, that black stuff in soot, which are tightly arranged in careful rows in a crystal. The result is a clear crystal harder than anything on Earth. Artificial diamonds have long been made using a great deal of heat and pressure, but the new process, using temperatures as low as 250 degrees Fahrenheit, condense carbon atoms out of vapor in low pressure. The new process is much cheaper and is able to place a diamond coating on various materials. Long-wearing machine parts can be diamond-coated, as can ball bearings, making them permanently lubricated. Watch crystals, coated with a diamond to make them scratch-resistant, will be marketed by Seiko. Now, diamonds can be made cheaply and easily out of most anything. One researcher even made diamonds out of peanut butter, although he reported that the diamonds had a greenish tinge to them because of the nitrogen in peanuts. We have only begun to scratch the surface, so to speak, in learning about the wonderful abilities the Creator built into the material world. We are only beginning to discover the depths of His wisdom. Such discovery is in keeping with His instructions to us to subdue the earth.
For a free copy of our Creation Resource Catalog, visit our website at creationmoments.com or call us toll-free at 1-800-42-BIBLE. And be sure to join us next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
We thank Reliable Heating and Cooling for being a corporate underwriter of AM 850 KFUO. Here's a few winter heating tips from Reliable. Don't let your furnace filters get dirty. Check the filters at least once a month, replace disposable filters, or clean the permanent ones whenever they do look dirty. Reliable Heating and Cooling performs routine maintenance, such as cleaning filters and humidifiers. 8463 Delport Drive, Reliable Heating and Cooling, 314-423-3535.
Garden Land Express, the Missouri Botanical Garden's beloved miniature railroad and plant display. It's a rustic wilderness escape to the mountains, forests, and lodges of America's Great Western National Parks. And it kicks off the garden's 2007 holiday season of activities. See this amazing display covering 5,000 square feet in the Orthwine Floral Display Hall. Garden Land Express, now through January 1st. For more, go to mobot.org.
This is the Ask the Pastor Hour of the Bible Study. I'm Chuck Rathert. Our guest today on the telephone from Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Greenwood, Indiana, is Pastor Jeff Alexander. And we began the program by talking about, a segment of the O'Reilly Factor, which was aired last night, in which a sophomore, Chad Farnan, I believe is his name, goes to school in California, has actually filed a lawsuit against his history teacher because the history teacher is taken to berating Christianity and Jesus and conservatives as well in his history class. So with your permission, Pastor Alexander, let's listen to a little bit more of this.
Let's hear it.
Well, now Chad Farnan is suing the school district and Dr. Corbett. Chad and his attorney, Robert Tyler, join us now from Orange, California. You know, Chad, if I had known you a few months ago, I would have put you on the cover of my book, Kids Are Americans Too, because, you know, you go to a public school, and it looks like, from our research, that this teacher, Dr. Corbett, he does this on an almost daily basis. Am I wrong?
No, you're completely right.
What is his presentation? He's a history teacher, and, I mean, every day he comes in, and it's this kind of stuff?
Yes, about 20 to 30 minutes every day before he actually starts talking about AP European history.
When you're from a religious background, your parents are religious?
Yeah.
What religion are you?
We're a Christian.
All right. So you're religious. You go in. You have to hear this every day. Did you talk to Dr. Corbett about it? You say, look, this is just one side. It's not fair and balanced. And, you know, you're bashing religion, and it's pretty offensive to me. Did you say that to him?
I haven't personally, but my friend's parents, who he got pulled out of the class because of it, he actually mocked the parent for saying that he needs to show both sides of the story, which he doesn't.
All right. So you never confronted him yourself?
No.
You were afraid to do that?
No, I'm not afraid. It's just every single person I've heard who actually confronts him, they're shot down, basically.
Now, you brought a tape recorder, obviously. You brought a tape recorder into the classroom. Did he know you were taping him?
I'm not aware if he actually saw it, but I didn't really hide it. I just set it down in my backpack every day before class.
Now, once you got the tape and once you documented what he was doing, did you bring it to the principal? Did you bring it to the authority and say, look, this isn't right. I'm sitting in here and this is what the guy's doing every day?
We showed it to our lawyers and they said this is not right. This is illegal. This is against the law. He cannot do this. And that's when the lawsuit came up.
Okay, so you just basically brought the tapes to Mr. Tyler and other attorneys. You didn't go yourself. And I understand that you're a sophomore in high school. What do the other kids in the class say, Chad, about the presentation of the teacher? What do they say about it?
Some absolutely like him. They believe him. And others, like most of my friends, they're like confused about why he's saying this stuff. Like, they don't understand why he's talking about this.
All right, Pastor Alexander, there it is. You hear it now from the lips of the sophomore. What are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are, I think that would have probably been best for the young man to express his offense to his teacher. But as he kind of said, you know, and as Bill O'Reilly pointed out, he is a sophomore in high school. I also think that probably a best way to do it would be to take something like that to a principal first. I guess I'm kind of leery towards, you know, litigation as being the first step. Why not take it to the principal and let the school administration handle it? And if they don't handle it, then go further up the chain of command. But it certainly sounds that he's not alone in being offended by this person and what the teacher is saying. And it seems that it's off topic, which is always interesting. But the thing that gets me the most is that there are students who really like the teacher. And I think that I've seen that in my own life, that when someone comes and kind of badmouths Christianity or conservatism or the Bible or you know, that oftentimes people are looking for a reason not to believe. Sometimes I found that in my life growing up, especially in college, that was around some college-age people who were looking for a reason not to believe the faith in which they were raised or the faith that they saw as being, the conservative, goody-goody way to do it. But ultimately, they were gravitating towards people who would cast doubt upon Jesus Christ and cast doubt upon the truth of the gospel. And so I think that's something to be concerned about. Obviously, it's a matter of Christian freedom how to handle a situation like that. Would I myself have handled it the same way as this young man did? No, I wouldn't have. But that's a choice that he made.
So you're saying there's a Matthew 18 responsibility on the part of this Christian young man?
Well, I don't know about that necessarily. Matthew 18, kind of talking about brother to brother, Christian to Christian, confronting someone who has offended you. And so I don't know if Matthew 18 is the best thing to apply to this, because obviously the teacher is not a Christian. But I think sometimes probably a best approach in most of disagreements that I've ever come across in life is to try to, first of all, go to the person one-on-one and to share with them. And maybe that would have even strengthened this young man's case had he gone to the teacher and said, I am very offended by this. Would you please stop it?
You see, I thought about this too, mm-hmm. And it seemed to me, not that I'm a mind reader, but it seemed to me that this was the essence of the O'Reilly question. I do think it strengthens your case, mm-hmm. if you sort of work your way up the chain of command. However,
yes.
There is the issue of teacher-student. It's one thing for somebody to take issue with somebody else when they're more or less on a peer level.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're a student and the person whom you are confronting is in control of your grades,
right,
and is in control of at least a component of your education, perhaps can hurt you or retaliate, and this man certainly sounds as if he is capable of retaliation, then I'm not so sure that that's the way to go. I can't make my mind up on it.
Sure, Sure, that's a tough situation. I think that there's a lot of fear in classrooms, and that's probably a reason why many people who are offended or disagree with what's being said by a teacher are afraid to speak up, because they're afraid that what that teacher can do to their grade.
Our numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. James wants to weigh in. Hi, James. You're on the Bible study.
Good morning, Brother Chuck.
Good morning.
Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning, James.
I'd like to participate in this no-spin zone of the Bible study discussion today. And I'd like to participate by offering a fair and balanced perspective on the historical posture the teacher may have been espousing.
Yeah, okay.
Pastor, Karl Marx called religion the opiate of the people.
Mm-hmm.
As a tool, a religion that he would use as a tool of the elite that keeps peasants from revolting against the injustices that they suffer. And no history teacher worth his salt would not compare and contrast the perspectives with other perspectives of that time, especially in European history. So, Pastor, could you state a little bit about Karl Marx and his influence on peasant revolts, especially against the Tsars, who were Christians?
I certainly am going to be of no help to you on that one, Chuck.
Yeah.
Not having studied Karl Marx too much, and you know, that's definitely not my area of expertise. So I'm sorry.
Well,
I can't help out a lot there.
There is a little bit of a problem here, in that we may be, James may be asking an apples to oranges question,
mm-hmm.
because, at least as it pertains to the context of our radio station and our Bible study program here, we are forever making the case that there are religions and then there is Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And so to go with any advocate of communism, whether it's the Communist Manifesto and Karl Marx and what is it, Friedrich Engels, I think, and to lump Christianity in there already is, from my perspective, flaws the question.
Sure.
So this is, I think, what undermines the teacher's position. The teacher has committed this error, in my mind, and maybe in a dialogue outside the classroom, you could engage that.
Mm-hmm.
His hostility is apparent, and for him to lump Christianity into that mix, I think flaws or undermines his perspective. I would answer James by saying, when it came to the oppressed African Americans in this country, it was the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King who perhaps, because at least in part, if not in essence, led the charge against that injustice, that sprung from, in some measure, from his Christian faith.
Sure.
So there. Karl Marx, that's the way I would respond to that.
Sure, sure, and I think that, you know, the gospel gives freedom. The gospel grants freedom to people, not repression. And I think that the true gospel of Jesus Christ stands out against all the other religions of the world, and it grants total freedom. Freedom from sin, freedom to live the life, not having to worry about, you know, how is this making me look before God, that we have the freedom to know that when God looks at us in Jesus Christ, that we are seen as covered by his blood. We are free to live as his people. And the gospel of Jesus brings freedom. Religion, on the other hand, is law. And that does not bring freedom. That brings repression. That brings the weight of life and puts it upon people's shoulders that they're responsible for something. And I believe that the gospel is countercultural, and it says that, no, it's not about you, it's about Jesus and the freedom that he brings.
Unfortunately for people, perhaps this teacher or people who think along these lines, if you feel that one man, one wife is, mm-hmm. and marriage is an oppressive perspective, if you feel that being restricted from killing your unborn children is a repressive perspective, if you feel like you ought to be able to behave in any way you want, any time you want, sexually, and that anybody who is opposed to that is a repressive perspective, then you're not going to embrace Christianity.
Sure. And I think this teacher would be a good one to kind of challenge you with. You know, he would probably claim himself to be very open-minded, to be very welcoming to all alternate viewpoints. But then, you see how that plays out when you would confront him and disagree with him, and you'll see how open-minded he is.
Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. Donna, you're up next on the Bible
study. Well, I think the pastor is saying a lot of good things, but I want to disagree with him very much about going to the teacher, going to the principal, because some of us have went through this since the early 70s, and we took that route, and we saw what happened. Nothing happened.
Right.
There's a cover-up in the schools. These things are protected. In the early 70s, there was a change in history, change in everything, change in authority, and that just doesn't work anymore. You know, the principals and especially the superintendents are paid very, very good money, very much money, and they keep these things quiet. And whenever you go to them, we have, they make you feel like you are a ridiculous fool, and they tell you you're the only one that's ever come about these things.
Mm-hmm. Which you know is not true.
It is not true.
Yep. And I think your perspective on that is very different, you know, since you've been through it, and I thank you for sharing
that. Well, I think there are a lot of people that have been through it, and I think I'm glad to see that the cat's coming out of the bag on this, and I hope these schools are exposed. They tear down the children's faith. People work hard to instill faith in them, take them to church, teach them about the Lord, and then the schools teach them the exact opposite. So, Pastor, I think you better realize that it's past the year 2000, and people got to start moving. They got to start speaking out, or we will have no freedom of any sort. So thank you. God bless.
Well, thanks for the call, and I'm going to do something that's just very familiar to our Bible study listeners here, because it happens all the time in our Bible study conversations, and I'm going to agree with Donna and with Pastor Alexander.
Sure.
Donna is right when she says the cat is out of the bag. What has been captured on tape is something that has been alleged by many people over the years. And, of course, since it's not on tape, it can be denied and is denied. But it happens frequently, and it happens all around the country. And I know what it's like. Jeff, maybe you or your parents know what it's like to work your way up the chain and get nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
However, I would agree with you that if you move directly to the lawsuit option, which you're free to do,
sure,
if that's the way you want to play your cards, you're free to do that. I don't think that's unethical. But the first question you're probably going to get from the people who are in play is, why didn't you take this directly to the teacher? Why didn't you take this then to the principal? Why didn't you do it that way?
Right.
And I think the answer to that, if it is, well, we chose not to, I think it weakens your case. And I think if you do work your way up the chain, it, as you pointed out, strengthens your case.
I think it does. And maybe you go into it and you realize, you know, this is going to get me nowhere. But in the end, it will strengthen my case. So I should go to the teacher. I should go to the principal. I should go to the school board. But I would agree with our caller, too, that it is time to stand up against this. And you know, each school district is very different, and I think that, you know, that's another thing to keep in mind, that, you know, out on the West Coast is going to be very different as far as what he's dealing with, as far as administrators, teachers, the culture of the school board, as opposed to something that I might have here in Indiana. I've seen a huge difference in culture and community between Phoenix, Arizona, and suburban Indianapolis. And so I think you have to know the context that you're operating in. I personally am, like I said before, I wouldn't go the lawyer route immediately, but other people would, and I think that's an area of Christian freedom and where people are going to have different opinions on how to act. But I certainly think that people need to be mobilized and encouraged and to stand up and fight injustice.
All right, now this is something of a church-state issue. This is a situation where a young man, a sophomore in high school, feels as if he's under attack because he is a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
That's the church end of it. But the person who he alleges is doing the attacking is an agent of the state. He's a teacher in the school district. Therefore, I think I understood you to say that since this is not a dispute within the church, Matthew 18 does not necessarily apply here. So my question for you is, while I understand and tend to agree with the notion that your first step is to go to the teacher and communicate to him that you got a problem, however, if there's been a string of folks who have already taken that step, and the results are well known, as the student put it, they were all shot down, Do I still need to take that step, Pastor, when we already know from other experiences that the outcome is not productive?
I can see how you would be led to think, why bother? Why bother? But I would go back to, as you had said before, that I think that it would probably strengthen this young man's case had he done that, had he had a personal testimony to how he was treated by the teacher and how he ran into a brick wall even when he expressed his personal offense. You know, I think that we are dealing with church and state issues to a certain extent, but you're also, you know, church and state is dealing with, you know, institutions, and you're dealing here with an individual. And so he's not necessarily coming in and trying to say, you know, the Christian church, I'm speaking on behalf of the Christian church, and we deserve, you know, truth and justice and freedom, and the Christian church is offended, but he himself is operating now as an individual. And that's where it's not so clear.
All right, let's take this call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Hi, Terry, you're on the Bible study.
Hi, I think that I would like to throw a little different direction on this conversation.
Okay. Go right ahead.
Don't forget that as Christians, we are taught to turn the other cheek, let God take revenge on those who are not right, forgive 70 times 7, and use Jesus as our example.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus, even when the soldiers came to get him before he was crucified, hardly spoke. He was very gentle in his, he wasn't radical or yelling or anything like, you have the wrong man or anything like that. Which you would almost say was very compliant.
Sure. He even told his disciples to put their swords away, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So when the Christians don't stand up and rebel against things, we need to remember what we're taught.
Well, we talked about that a little bit earlier in the program. Let me ask you this, Terry. If a teacher in a public school stood up and basically, generally, stereotypically berated African Americans, do you think African Americans should just turn the other cheek?
Or oh, my lands, no. They wouldn't.
But you think Christians should?
I'm saying that's what we've been taught to do.
All right, we'll talk about it. Thanks for the call.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go over that part again, Pastor Alexander.
Sure. I think that, first of all, as I've said before, I think this is an area of Christian freedom. On how you respond. I think that when you are, as an individual, hurt and harmed in some way, that it is our responsibility to let the Lord, you know, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord, and to realize that the judgment is ultimately His, that we aren't called to be out there being the people who are fighting every battle, who are fighting every person who seems to wrong us or offend us in one way or another. However, I would say, as we said before in the program, that when there is an injustice, the Bible also calls us to stand up against it, to stand up against injustice in society, and especially when our God is mocked and His people are mocked, I think that Christians should stand up, and too often we don't because of fear. I think that Christians will respond in different ways, but I appreciate the fact when people do take a stand and are willing to dialogue with the teacher or stand up and say, I don't appreciate that, and this is why.
We have the example of Jesus standing silent before his captors and going quietly to the cross, and we also have Jesus making a whip and cleansing the temple.
Right.
Apparently, either response may be appropriate depending on the circumstances and depending
sure.
on the motivation.
Sure. And obviously the circumstances of him being led like a sheep to the slaughter was that he was fulfilling the purpose for which he had come to this earth. And so, you know, he was going willingly to the cross because that was the reason why he was born. That was the reason why he came into this earth, was to come and offer that sacrifice for sin so that, that you and I and all people might be justified before God, might be made right before God, and might be given the gift of everlasting life. So that needs to be kept into context here. Why did Jesus respond that way? Was because he was fulfilling what he had come to do.
We have more callers here than we have time left to get to. Let's talk to Chet. Hi, Chet. You're on the Bible study.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you be brief?
Hello. Yeah, I'll try to be quick, Chuck. When Donna called earlier, just coincidentally, I was making a delivery to a grade school on my mail route at the time. She was speaking about how the system has changed and different people are in control of our school system. But the thought occurred to me, and a thing that we all need to think about, is that not only do we need to educate our Christian children about Christ Jesus, but we need to just directly explain to them, gentlemen, the difference between the kingdom of the left and the kingdom of the right.
Amen.
Children are a lot brighter than what we give them credit for, and we must make them understand that the school system is not the bastion of their faith as it may have once been in American society. And I just wanted to put that point there.
All right. Thanks for the call. Explain the kingdom of the right, kingdom of the left thing here, Pastor Alexander, as it pertains to this subject.
Well, the kingdom of the left, we're talking about the civic world. We're talking about things like government. We're talking about the public sphere. We're talking about you know, jobs and society, so forth. We believe that God is the God of all of that. But in that,
so God is in the state too.
The state, you know, and government and society is not necessarily, as Chet was saying, responsible for communicating the good news of Jesus. That is the responsibility of what we call the kingdom of the right, the church, the people of God, where God rules by his grace, where he rules through his word and his sacraments, and where that is where, as Chet points out, I think it's important to communicate to our children that we're not sending you off to public school to get your education about who God is. We're going to provide that in the home. We're going to provide that in church and Sunday school, and you're going to learn great things in over here in school, but we want to make sure that you know that they're not there to be your teachers about who God is. That's the parents' job. That's pastor's job. Christian teachers' jobs.
Pastor Alexander, I want to thank you so much for walking through this issue with me and helping me understand a little bit better. God's blessings to you.
Thanks, Chuck. It's
enjoy
always
the
a
snow.
Privilege.
Make sure you know where that shovel is now. It's going to snow again eventually. You know
that's
that,
right.
Pastor Jeff Alexander, Mount Olive Lutheran Church, Greenwood, Indiana. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
All righty. We will not have an Ask the Pastor program tomorrow. We will instead have live Advent worship from Ascension Lutheran Church. Pastor John Schmicke is here in the 10 o'clock hour for Genesis 40.
Listen to Chuck Rather and guests Monday through Friday at the same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of the Bible study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org.